Welcome. You're listening to the Media Talk 101 podcast. Media Talk 101 is a nonprofit ministry dedicated to teaching media discernment in the light of following Christ. I want to encourage you to visit MediaTalk101.org for helpful articles, videos, and other resources, including information about our award-winning documentary, Captivated, Finding Freedom in a Media Captive Culture. We also want to encourage you to contact us with your questions or comments. You can write to podcast@MediaTalk101.org. Once again, that's podcast@MediaTalk101.org. We'd love to hear from you, and especially if you have some questions. I'm founder and president, Philip Telfer, and I want to welcome back into the studio today, sort of. We'll explain that in a moment, is my friend and co-worker, Rhett Simpkins. How you doing, Rhett?
Very well. How are you, Philip?
Doing good. Well, this is a new podcast, a new setup for us, because usually you and I are in the same room, but we're not, are we?
No.
So, well, Rhett is, actually Rhett's in the Media Talk office where we would normally be podcasting, and I'm in Texas right now. And so this will be our first attempt at doing remote podcasting. And so we're, hoping this goes well. I'm very grateful for Rhett's efforts in, doing the editing and all of that. So it'll make a little bit more work for him, but, we're gonna, hope that this, turns out okay. So, well, Rhett, why don't you tell us what we have planned for this week?
Yeah, we've been going through the summer question and answer series, and we do have a question, but we also have a couple articles that came through recently, and I thought we could start by talking about those.
Yeah, that'd be great. So, what do we have?
Well, one article was about the campaign for a commercial-free childhood. And they recently filed a complaint with the Federal Trade Commission about some of these digital apps that are being marketed to parents, but marketing them in a way that makes parents believe that they're actually educational for infants.
Ah, that sounds like the baby Einstein thing, doesn't
yep.
it?
Yep, very similar.
Okay, that's a good subject to bring up. You know, when we interviewed Dr. Dimitri Christakis at the Children's Research Hospital in Seattle, he spent some time talking about baby Einstein. Now, we didn't end up including that information in the main part of the documentary. I believe it may be in some of the bonus features. So if you have the documentary Captivated, you've got the feature-length version. Many people may not realize that there are over 2 hours of bonus features that we embedded in that. It's a dual-layer DVD, and we loaded it up with lots of great stuff because there were so many things I learned in the process of making this documentary, but we couldn't fit it all. It would have been a 4 or 5 hour documentary. So what we did was we after we got done editing it, I took all the other stuff that I had to cut out, and I put it into bonus features, and one of those is Dr. Dimitri Christakis, and he talked about the baby Einstein videos, which sounds very similar to what the CCFC is bringing up here with these new apps for babies. And what it was the Einstein videos were marketed to make parents believe that if they let their babies watch these things, that they would get smarter. They'd kind of have an edge up on other babies. And the research proved that simply was not true. And in fact, the thing that Dr. Dimitri Christakis pointed out was that if you put a baby in front of a television, regardless of what they're watching, there's going to be several things that are actually going to be diminished in the development of that in that baby. It impacts their brain development. It'll affect their vocabulary, you know, so the number of words in their vocabulary over a baby that doesn't watch any television. It actually stymies their cognitive skills, so that they'll have less cognitive. They won't be to the their optimum, you know, cognitive ability by the time they start school, compared to children who don't watch any television. And the other thing is it shortens their attention span. So those were at least three factors that they know for certain. And you know, this was the research on this was so clear that Disney, who owns the Baby Einstein DVDs, there was a landmark FTC judgment against them, and they had to remove the educational label off of these DVDs because not only did they not help your babies, they actually hinder their brain development. And it has nothing to do with the content at that stage. You know, obviously, listening to classical music and watching bright colors and things like that on a DVD certainly does not seem as harmful as, you know, your children watching violent media or babies watching things that are violent or something like that. But and you surely don't want to expose your babies to that kind of bad content. But even this supposed good content just isn't helpful, and it hurts. And so they had to remove that educational label. So now it looks like we've got the same thing going on with baby apps. And so is that kind of what you learned? So did you read this article, Rhett? What did you think about it?
Yeah, I did. I read it, and you know, it just basically outlined their reason for filing the complaint, and just that there's absolutely no data that would back up their claim that it actually does help. And certainly, you know, as you just mentioned, you know, there is evidence on the flip side of that, the fact that it actually does hinder development. And what's also interesting is I found out that just 5 days after they filed the complaint, one of the producers of these apps actually did remove the labeling as being educational. So they've already, you know, gone that far within just a few days of filing a complaint.
Okay, well, that's good. You know, and the other thing this does for babies, in my opinion, this is not has nothing to do with scientific studies, although I'm sure you could find some things that might validate this, but just from my experience and watching children and raising children myself, you know, screen time begets screen time, and screen time, the younger the children are, I believe fosters more screen time. They begin to orient their attention to screens. And so if we start babies off with iPhone apps and iPad apps, you know, and certainly they're capable of figuring out how to make those things work, and they're very attracted to them. You know, that just fosters more screen time, you know, and what it sets a trajectory. And, you know, eventually, you know, that those babies are not going to be content with just baby apps as they get older. They're going to want the next app. And this is the same thing with television viewing. I've talked with a lot of parents, and they say, oh, well, we have TV, but we only let our kids watch cartoons. Well, you know, I'm not going to go off on you know, rabbit trail here on cartoons. But when I hear parents say that, I'll just say, you know, look, you know, if you set this trajectory for them, of just being amused by staring at a screen and watching nonsense, eventually they're not going to be content to just watch the cartoons. They're going to want to watch something else. So you are actually enabling them, and you are setting the tone for their future and how they're going to interact with these things. So I think these are all pertinent concerns, and I thought this was a very interesting article. So anything else, any more thoughts that you have on that?
Yeah, well, I just, you know, being that I have two young children, it's certainly something that I've been observing, and I don't have any research or anything personally to back it up, but I just have seen a tremendous difference between, you know, parenting styles and parents who just give their kids a smartphone and parents who, you know, would be more reserved regarding that, and it, from what I can see, there is a big difference in child development, even in these, you know, just little snippets that I get to see.
I agree with you, and children, especially babies, I mean all ages, you know, children need interaction with people, not screens. That's going to be the most important thing for them. But it's not as convenient. You know, it's more convenient to occupy a child with a screen, whether it's an iPhone or iPad app or the television or some other screen-based game or whatever it may be. It's certainly much more convenient. And so I'm very sympathetic to the you know, it's hard. It's hard raising children. And of course, we're the dads, you know, the moms, especially when they're really young, they've got it really hard. And so I don't want to sound unsympathetic toward the mom who's frazzled and she's got maybe more than one little baby in diapers, and she's trying to get dinner ready, or trying mm-hmm. to get the house clean, or whatever the case may be, and you're trying to balance a baby on one hip while make some food for dinner, or whatever the case is. I know it's difficult, and it seems like the easy out to just fall back to a screen, and it may have a temporary, it's seemingly temporary positive result. It keeps the baby quiet and occupied, but you have to realize there's a long-term consequence, and so mm-hmm. you have to choose your battles. Do I want the short-term relief, the convenience, or do I want to do what's right, and spend that time interacting, reading books, finding things to do. You've got options, and I would just encourage you not to just default to the screen. And so I'm proud of you, Rhett, and for your wife, Emily, for taking the high road. It's the more challenging road, but you know what? We have to remember, long before there were digital devices in homes, parents were raising babies for about 6,000 years without them just fine.
Yep.
They did it. there's mm-hmm. you can do it. I mean, it's been proven. People, babies survived. They lived. They grew up, and they started their own families, and they did that for 6,000 years without these electronic devices, and I think they were better off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, children are going to learn from the media or from interaction with people. And that reminds me of this other article, Parents Are Digital Hypocrites. It's at, I believe, time.com.
Okay.
And, it's interesting because they talk about how even children who have restrictions on media, if their parents are using digital devices on a regular basis, the children still develop this interest in media or even media habits that their parents aren't exactly sure where they got, but it's just a reflection of them learning from what their parents are doing.
Yes, that's just it. I mean, we often think we look at the media habits of children and youth and even young adults, and we go, wow, look at this. I mean, what a problem. But where did they come up with these habits? And I think this article is pointing out that they've developed them from watching mom and dad. So mom mm-hmm. and dad are as digitally connected. And when I read this article, I thought it was interesting. They talk about a study that was done by a woman named Vicky Rideout. She's a researcher, it says, who conducted a national survey for the Center on Media and Human Development at Northern University. And I'm quoting here from this Time article. It says, Rideout surveyed 2,300 parents of children from birth to age 8 and found that about 40% established what she calls a media-centric environment, logging an astonishing 11 hours a day of total screen time. And so
wow.
TV, DVDs, computer, games, tablets, and smartphones. And then there was a slightly larger group, 45%, were what she calls media moderate parents with just under 5 hours of screen time. And then media light parents were the rarest, with only 16% falling into that category. And quote here, this is Vicky Rideout. She says, it's the parents who determine the environment and set an example. And she goes on to say, the parents are the primary drivers of children's media use. So there we have it. I agree with her. I think she hit the nail on the head, and we better be careful not to be digital hypocrites and say one thing but live another way. We need to be an example to our children. And one of the things I teach all the time at the seminars that I give when it comes to a healthy media diet in the home, in what I would call, I use the word diet, and I expand it into the word discernment. The families needing ongoing discernment from day to day. And one of the first things on my list is for parents to model good media discernment and making wise media choices and how they use technology. We need to model it as parents. And once we're modeling it and we're demonstrating that media is under our control and we're not in bondage to it, and that we are showing discipline and that we can use it without getting completely sucked in by it, then we're able to take the next step, which is to mentor our children. So before you can mentor them, before you can teach them, you have to model it. Otherwise, you become like this article in Time, you become the digital hypocrite. And children see right through that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, those are my thoughts.
Okay, great. Well, we do have a question as well, and I think we have enough time for that.
Okay.
So I know that over the years, you've gotten a lot of questions about social networking and specifically Facebook. And people are wondering, should my children have a Facebook, or should I, or should Christians in general use Facebook? And you have spoken on this podcast about our use here at Media Talk 101 of social networks. But do you have any other thoughts about the subject of Facebook and social networking?
Oh boy, do I have some thoughts. You know I have some thoughts.
Yeah.
So, well, let me start. I think it would be an interesting just to kind of share my journey with social networks. And it goes back, I think, to about 2000, oh, maybe 2002 or 2003. And it was kind of a strange thing. You know, many people that are listening, you may not know that before I started Media Talk 101 and before I was involved in pastoral ministry, my primary ministry was as a singer and songwriter. And in fact, if you want to hear some original music, you can go to philiptelfer.com. I've woefully neglected that website because of Media Talk 101, but as far as I know, it's still on the web, and you can go there and you can download about 100 songs for free, or you can just listen to them. I'll warn you, the site's a little bit clunky because it's been neglected, but you'll get to see another side of Philip Telfer there. But when I first began to get into recording music and putting it on the web, I didn't know how to do websites. And so there was a website for musicians at the time called mp3.com. And this is where, you know, guys like me who didn't know anything about web design could go and learn to upload a few songs and put a little profile up, and that was great. And one of the downsides was the free part of that, you know, you had the ads. You know, this has always been a problem, you know, the ads that come up. And here I'm trying to send, you know, these songs to pastors and promoters, and then I was kind of ashamed by some of the ads. So then I learned that you could pay a premium price and get your mp3.com page without ads. And so I did that. I paid the money. I didn't want the ads. It was too distracting. And so I hosted my music there, and I would use that to help, you know, get the word out of what I was doing. Well, at some point, I think it was in, you know, 2002 or 2003, I don't know exactly the time, and somebody bought mp3.com. I don't know who it was. They just gave us an announcement for all their customers that it had been bought and would be closed down.
Hmm.
And I was bummed because I finally, you know, I thought it was a great website. It was very helpful for me. And so I was talking with a friend of mine who was also a musician and about this, because he had his music up on mp3.com, and he tells me, "Oh, Philip, I know, it's a bummer," but he says, "Everybody's moving over to this new website called MySpace. And so we've moved our music over to there. I'll send you an invite." And so about a week later, I get an invite from my friend, and he was a Christian musician. And I clicked the link, and it took me to the homepage of MySpace. Well, what I ended up seeing was so shocking, because it was the kind of sign up for, and it was automatically generating things from people's pages, and I'm telling you, it was scandalous. It was really bad. My first, what I was accosted with when that page came up, was something I just would have never chose to see, you know, and I thought that it was some sort of joke. I thought my friend had sent me to a website that you know, you wouldn't want to be visiting if you have any scruples. And I thought, this is terrible. Why would he send this website? So I backed out of it really quick, and I thought, oh, this is terrible. And later I realized that this was generating pictures and content from people's websites. Now, they might have changed how they promoted themselves later on, but, you know, you never get a second chance to make a first impression. And my first impression of MySpace was ugly, and there was no way I was going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. consequently, the Lord used that to compel me to learn how to do web design. You know, I just I knew nothing about web design, but I was determined that I needed to just learn how to make my own website. And so that's when I began to develop philiptelfer.com. And thankfully, those early years of struggling through HTML allowed me to then launch MediaTalk101.org. And in fact, the website today, I still have designed, and with your help, Brett, you know, we manage this website. And that's been a blessing in disguise. But it was really from just being in shock and horror of MySpace.com. So I just avoided this. And at that time, MySpace, the buzzword social network, was not, if it was in existence, it wasn't prevalent. So, but it eventually became very prevalent, this idea of the social network. And I avoided it like the plague. And it seemed like any time it came up, it was just bad news. And I would discourage Christians and teens from being on MySpace. Because once, when I would have the opportunity to see someone else's MySpace, they'd say, "Oh no, it's not that bad," and they'd show me their MySpace, and I had a different opinion of what was not so bad than they did. So I just was not fond of that. Well, of course, you know, you fast forward several years, and then you have the new kid on the block. There were other social networks, but then Facebook comes along, and there were people migrating over to Facebook. They felt it was a better platform for social networking. For the most part, I completely ignored it until a young man in San Antonio who was in ministry, and his name's James Jennings. He has a ministry called I'll Be Honest. He was encouraging me from a ministry standpoint to get a Facebook, and we had a meeting at a Starbucks, and I brought my laptop, and he actually set up the MediaTalk 101 Facebook page. And so that began my journey into learning, and I thought it would be a good thing for me to learn about Facebook. Now, here's a disclaimer here. I really don't care for Facebook. Personally, it's not something that really thrills me. It's not something I think that people should have, nor is it something that I think people shouldn't have. I mean, I'm going to explain all that in a moment, but I'm just kind of giving you the background of how, you know, how I got onto Facebook. But I know that it's a stumbling block for some people. But for me, I pretty much ignore it, other than what, you know, if I want to try to contact somebody. So that's a little bit of personal information. I know that that's a long intro. But when it comes to the questions that people have, one of the things that I realized once I had my own Facebook profile and began to learn a little bit more about this social networking thing and began to you know, connect with friends and begin to connect with pseudo friends and begin to connect with people who I didn't even know, you know, on Facebook, but they knew me maybe from hearing me speak somewhere. And I began to see, especially young people who profess to be Christians, and I'd go to their Facebook page and I would see nothing but nonsense and what I would call an advertisement for the enemy, an advertisement for the things of the world, rather than something that reflected their Savior, Jesus Christ. And it broke my heart. And so those were some of my early impressions, as well as I saw how people were using it, and I didn't think it was a very good thing. And so when parents would ask me, "What do you think of Facebook?" or "Do you think my teenager wants to be on Facebook?" what do you say? Well, you know, 1 Samuel 16:7 says, "For man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." And so Facebook is a very outward appearance focus, and that's what man tends to look at, is the outward appearance. But it's the Lord who looks at the heart. And you know, when you go to Facebook, I think this is still there. You know, when you go to your status, and you're going to update your status, there's this question, "What's on your mind?" And so you can type in, "What's on your mind?" And people do that. What's on their mind? Well, another verse that I like to point out is from Jesus. He said in Luke 6:45, "For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks." And so when you talk about what's on people's hearts, you know, Facebook is not so much of the problem as the heart of a person being the problem. Now, I do think there are some problematic things about Facebook, and I'll talk about that as well, but it starts with the heart. If the heart is corrupt, then what's going to come out of the heart? It says, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So if there is an individual, a young person, especially if they're professing to be a Christian, and what you see being posted on their Facebook page are things that are vile or things that are, to me, anti-Christ, you know, they're against Christ, or they are not godly, or they are things that are just there to promote themselves, or to say, hey, look at me. All of those things are, to me, things that just come out of the heart, and so Facebook just becomes a public platform. Now, generally, that's one of the things. It's a huge public platform. In fact, they say if Facebook was a country, it'd be the third largest in the world. It has over 1 billion users right now. So it's wow. It's this massive. So it's all, I look at it this way. You know, there's the internet and then there's Facebook. You know, it's that it's kind of like another internet in itself. You know, it's that huge. And so it certainly has the potential for doing good things, but for the most part I've seen more nonsense than I've seen good. I will say I have seen some Christian people that take a stand for Jesus Christ. They want to reflect Jesus Christ, and so they do that. Now in Psalm 17, verse 15, it says, "As for me, I will see your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake in your likeness." And one of the things I like to tell people is, you know, what you spend your time, there's two sides of this. It's not just what you're putting up on Facebook, but what you are reading, what you're consuming, the amount of time that you spend looking at what everybody else is posting, and what you spend your time focusing on is actually what you're going to become. You know, so here, the psalmist says, "I'll be satisfied when I awake in your likeness," and that's because he wants to see the righteous face of Jesus. He wants to put his focus on the righteousness of God. And when we place our focus on the righteousness of God and our focus in God's word, then we're going to become more like Christ. But if all we're focusing on are the things of the world through the Facebook posts of our friends or even enemies or even people who are not even friends, but we're just connected to them superficially, then that's what you're going to become. That's what you're going to become. If that's your focus. And so what I tell people is, if I was to go to your Facebook profile and I was to see a bunch of godless nonsense, here's my advice. Get your face out of Facebook. Get your face into God's book, mm-hmm. and spend time there meditating on God's word, meditating on Jesus Christ, putting your focus on him until your face begins to reflect his righteousness. And when that happens, I believe we can reflect Jesus Christ in every area of life, so that we reflect him in our homes, we reflect him in our communities, and we reflect him digitally as well. So that when you, if you happen to have a Facebook and you feel the need to have one, that when you are posting things, you are reflecting Christ. Now, some good examples of this would be my friend Corey Schonborn, who is we interviewed for Captivated. He's the young skateboarder, and he's one of the few guys that I know on Facebook that is always posting things that are about the righteousness of Christ, that are glorify God, that are pointing people to Jesus. And I appreciate that. I think I think that's a great use, and so I applaud Corey. And maybe it'd be good. Let's take a moment here. Let's play a clip from Demisha Charleston, who we interviewed about this very subject of Facebook. Let's hear what she has to say.
Social networkings have a drawing power. Number one, because everybody's doing it. Number two, because you feel like you're connected. We all want to feel like we're important and like we're wanted and we have friends. Once you find like 10 friends, you're like, oh, maybe I'll see if this person's on there, that person's on there, and then it just gets out of hand. So I got to the point where I was probably on Facebook every day, all day long. I had it on my phone, at work, my personal laptop, just staying connected. I kept hearing all these messages. What is this keeping you from being connected to God and that has more power? And those are idols. And I felt like Facebook was an idol for me. You want to disconnect yourself from that, but then there's a part of you that want to always see what's going on in somebody else's life. And so I was like, well, Lord, you know, I feel like I'm getting disconnected from you. Perhaps I need to be on a sabbatical from Facebook. I was off Facebook maybe about a month, if that long, maybe 3 weeks. And then I got back on. And I noticed as soon as I got back onto Facebook, those feelings came back, you know, this a different me. You know, I saw things I didn't want to see on Facebook again. And I'm like, why do I keep getting up here doing this to myself? I do think it's very hard to get disconnected from Facebook. I think it has to be a deep choice. Even, you know, something that God has to help you with, because it's so enchanting and you feel like there's a void in your life once you break free from it. I think the biggest thing is building a persona that's not real. You know, you post up these pictures because you want to look good. You post up videos because you want to seem important. You write statuses to make you seem like you're deep, like you have some kind of God-given insight. In my personal experience, I feel like Facebook is causing people to, I think it's more shallow with relationships on Facebook. It's just distorted because we feel like we are getting more connected to people because you have a scope into their lives. So we feel like, hey, I know this person, I know what they're doing. But I think that's just the surface. We don't really know what a person is dealing with, nor do we care. I won't say I'm gonna be off Facebook forever, but right now I do enjoy this feeling that I have of being away from Facebook. I just feel like I have more time to do more things. You know, it's just a peace that you can't experience any other way. When you're really down and out, you can't go to Facebook. You know, it's those face-to-face, the family, your closest friends, your church, that's gonna be there for you. Social networking sites are an enhancer for life relationships, but it's not a replacement.
Wow, what a great clip. Do you have anything else to add before we wrap it up today?
Yes, you know, 2 Corinthians 3:18 is another go-to verse. You know, when I talk to people about social networks, especially Facebook, it says, "But we all with unveiled face, beholding as in a mirror the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from glory to glory, just as by the Spirit of the Lord." Now, this goes along with what I was talking about earlier. What you focus on is what you're going to become like. And so we see that we behold his face as in a mirror, this glory of the Lord. And we can be transformed into that image from day to day. But if you are beholding Facebook all the time, you know, that's what you behold, then that's what you're going to become. And the more nonsense you behold, the more nonsense is going to take root into your heart. And I've often viewed Facebook as kind of mirrored glass or two-way glass. You know, mirrored glass is designed so that, you know, on one side of it, you just see a mirror and you can see your own reflection. On the other side of it, you can see through it. And so they use these for studies and observation and for various settings, and they work. It actually gives the person on the mirrored side a sense of privacy. Even though it's not private, they don't really know who's behind that glass there. It could be one person, or in the case of Facebook, it could be a billion people. But yet that sense, which is not true, that sense of privacy that mirrored glass provides, allows a person to kind of let their guard down and kind of be themselves. And I believe that Facebook is like mirrored glass. It gives that person a sense of privacy, but it really isn't private. The things that they're publishing on their page is very public. And there are those on the other side of the glass that look on, and some of them in amusement, but some of them, like myself, oftentimes in utter horror. You know, I can't believe what this person is posting. This is shocking. But once again, there's this real sense of, you know, what, you know, I'm just posting this stuff and I'm amusing myself. They're looking at themselves in the mirror, and who knows, you know, trying to bolster their own pride or keep up with the Joneses, or who knows all the different things that go on in a person's heart that compel them to do the things that they do on a social network. So I want to encourage our listeners here today that to be the people that put our focus on the Lord Jesus Christ, and that we endeavor to become like Him, and that we realize that all of these little things, and this term that I've been using, the dripping faucet, this faucet that's constantly dripping in our lives, this digital faucet, this does have an effect on us. And even going to Facebook, you know, little bits here and there throughout the day, you know, it will have an impact in how you view yourself, how you view the world, and whether or not you're taking time to look upon Jesus Christ. And so that's my encouragement. Now, I want to encourage you, if you have thoughts about Facebook that differ, I would love to hear from you. Send me an email. Send it to podcast@mediatalk101.org and tell me your thoughts. So I'd love to hear from you. And once again, as we close here, you've been listening to the Media Talk 101 podcast, and I encourage you to visit mediatalk101.org for helpful articles, videos, and other resources. And please get a copy of Captivated if you've not done so yet. Parents Television Council calls it deft and powerful. It's an award-winning documentary. We're the winners of the 2013 International Christian Visual Media Conference Award for Best Documentary. And so we really encourage you to get that. It'd be a blessing for your family and also for your church. Give it to your pastor. Tell him, play this. Set up a movie night at your church and pop some popcorn and watch Captivated. You can also get a study guide that goes along with that. So thank you again for taking the time to listen to this podcast. We'll catch you next time as we answer your questions and talk about things that we come across in the news.